Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.
So I've seen all of the Toy Story movies at this point, but this was the first one where it really drove home for me just how horrifying the Toy Story universe actually is.
That sat with me for a while. The worst part for me is, so in the Toy Story universe, the toys are animate. Mm-hmm. They live lives of their own, but they always pretend like they don't mm-hmm. when humans are around. Mm-hmm. Don't you think there's something nefarious going on there?
Yeah.
I mean, my immediate suspicion is something is afoot.
Yeah, they are one step short of, you know, dolls coming to life in horror films, like Chucky in the Child's Play franchise, or Annabelle in, the Annabelle movies.
Right. And hypothetically speaking, if I lived in a house that was stuffed full of what experts would call a whole lot of Legos, there are a lot of Sith Lords and evil wizards that are every night lurking about your very place.
Experts would not call them a whole lot of Legos. They would call them a whole lot of Lego. Because Lego is the plural of Lego.
I get that. The point being, I guess, that Toy Story raises a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. Like, how should we live if all of a sudden our lives are surrounded by toys that are pretending like they don't, they're not alive? But it also asks other questions as well, right?
Yes.
Why can't we just feel better about our own little weirdness? Mm-hmm. Or how concerned ought we be about the ways in which technology is encroaching on our lives?
Yep, and these are questions that we'll be answering coming up on Pop Shop.
Hi, I'm Alan Austin.
And I'm Patrick Hamilton.
And welcome to the Pop Shop. Here, stories on the screen inspire conversations about the real world off of it.
That's right, but today there'll be no playing around because we're talking about Toy Story 5.
Another groaner. If you're enjoying, please like, subscribe, toggle on that little button that's called notify, and maybe the spirit of the show that we're doing today. If you're actually talking to somebody live, face-to-face, just recommend the show.
Yep, and WVIA Pop Shop is supported by the FM Kirby Center, and we'll be talking with Neil from there in just a little bit.
But, obviously, before we can get there, we need to set up the film. Yep. So, I thought if we were going to set up the film, mm-hmm. I should go to WVIA's resident expert on all things Disney, Amy Zellers. She's also, like, the director of corporate development here, too. Mm-hmm. But I think of her as the expert on all things Disney. And she had kind of given me, I wouldn't call it a lecture, but a stern talking to about making sure that I knew the Toy Story franchise well enough.
Did you not know it beforehand?
I've watched them all, but it's been a while, right? So I asked her to provide a brief recap of each of the films that preceded this to kind of set mm-hmm. things up. She responded by saying, and I quote, providing a one or two sentence recap of each Toy Story film is a bit trickier than it sounds. And then she said, do you want a recap of plot or character development or audience or theme? And she eventually gave me plot. So to just remind us of where the Toy Story franchise has been, in the first one, Andy's longtime favorite toy, mm-hmm. Woody, becomes concerned because Buzz Lightyear has shown up.
There's competition, new toy,
right? There's competition. But after the two get lost, they have to work together to get back to Andy's bedroom and kind of figure out more of who they are. In the second, and this is the one that really escapes my memory, mm-hmm. Woody is apparently stolen by a toy collector. Mm-hmm. And ultimately has to decide whether he should stay in the museum celebrating his legacy or return to Andy's bedroom. And I'm assuming he returns to Andy's bedroom because in Toy Story 3, we see Andy grow up and go to college. Mm-hmm. For me, this is the one that really, like, emotionally hits when he gives up the toys. Like, there's a moment there where you could almost cry, I think, in the theater. And he hands them off to Bonnie, who now becomes mm-hmm. the main child. Toy Story 4 introduced Forky. Mm-hmm. Vicky's favorite of all the Toy Story characters. And so in this one, Woody finds a new purpose in his life in helping abandoned toys, mm-hmm. and he and Bo Peep run off together. So in this one, finally, we get to Toy Story 5. Mm-hmm. We have Bonnie, who excels at imaginative play, but is really struggling with how to kind of deal with life in an increasing, or friendship in an increasingly tech-dominated world. And so the gang reunites one last time, maybe. Yeah. To help Bonnie and maybe ourselves find a better way forward.
Yep. And the as you mentioned, the original gang is pretty much all back. We've got Tom Hanks as Woody, Tim Allen as Buzz Lightyear, and Joan Cusack as Jessie. We also have a couple of new characters in that you have Greta Lee is the voice of Lily Pad. Mm-hmm. And Conan O'Brien is Smarty Pants, which is a tech-enabled potty training device for some reason.
It does set up a whole series of gags.
Yes.
I suppose. You know, and thinking of a toy based around potty training, mm-hmm. it's kind of a weird...
A little weird.
Idea. And one of the questions that you sort of asked me mm-hmm. after you watched the film was, could we talk about the idea of weirdness versus conformity and mm-hmm. the tension that revolves around that in the film? Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll start there. In the first half of the show, of course, just to be clear, no spoilers.
Yep.
The second half of the show, you have to be a little bit careful.
That's right. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was one of, because it struck me in this movie, and it also struck me in, of all things, Masters of the Universe. And it wasn't something we were able to get to in that conversation. Mm-hmm. But in both films, there was sort of this celebration of weirdness in the face of conformity. You know, the two main girls in Toy Story 5, Bonnie that we've seen before, Blaze, who's introduced in this episode, both of them are kind of ostracized, for lack of a better phrase, because they're not like everyone else. They're very much into sort of toys and imaginative play and creativity. Everyone else is sort of into their lily pads or other sort of tech-enabled devices, and they're sort of ostracized for that.
Right.
And obviously the film sort of celebrates kind of their creativity and imagination as something to be encouraged rather than stifled. And I saw kind of the same thing happening in Masters of the Universe, particularly when he's at his job in the HR department and, you know, he spends his time looking at swords. And there's the point where his HR manager sort of chastises him and says something about, like, his looking at swords all the time is a problem and that he needs to stop doing that. And in both cases, I kind of struck by this idea of how we kind of don't allow people to be weird and that people are sort of being forced to fit particular types or norms and sort of stifle these other sides of themselves.
Yeah, I think you see that in a lot of Hollywood, which is weird because Hollywood often is seen as a force of oppression that mm-hmm. sort of is pushing people to conform, actually, but that they're celebrating the individualism, that kind mm-hmm. of, like, tension that exists there. It struck me as I watched the film, like, building off of that, that there's this tragedy kind of built into Toy Story, that mm-hmm. if you're a toy, you're eventually going to be left behind. Yeah. And we often think about it, how sad it is for the toys. But this mm-hmm. is a film that wants us to think more about how it's tragic for us mm-hmm. when we leave behind the toys, because we're leaving behind the imagination, the creativity, kind of the weirdness, right?
Yeah.
I think as a show, we ought to try to reclaim weird. It's not a bad thing, but it's something, it's something to celebrate. And so my favorite part of this movie, and Pixar and Toy Story in particular, I think has long been known for kind of its aesthetic mm-hmm. cutting edge quality, right? That it produces very beautiful mm-hmm. and new kinds of ways of looking at the world. My favorite part of this movie, and it's not even close, are the moments where we see Bonnie's imaginative play out, because all of a sudden we shift from the standard Toy Story look mm-hmm. to a very different look. And it was just so engaging that I looked up what the creators said about it. And they said when they went to Bonnie's imagination, they wanted it to be both tactile mm-hmm. and ephemeral.
Okay.
And that in the end, trying to capture her chaotic qualities, there's a lot of pastel colors and what they described as kind of a sketchy chalk kind of drawing.
It had a very sort of painterly effect.
Yeah. Painterly is, I think, a terrific way of describing it. And I take pictures of any sidewalk chalk I see anywhere. I'm just kind of obsessed by, like, the idea of chalk.
So let me get this straight. Your favorite part of the movie was the part that represented what you yourself like to do.
Yeah, and in some ways, because it was my favorite part because it was so dynamically different and it was so demonstrably weird. Mm-hmm. And the stories that she tells within it is weird. And I think that the film is telling us that, it's tragic that she's giving that up. But what's really tragic is that we give it up. That there's a moment in our lives where play and imagination and creativity are really, really important to us, where it's okay to be weird, to tell stories that nobody else is telling, to imagine a world that nobody else quite sees the same way that Bonnie sees it in this film. And the tragedy for us is we sort of at some point in our lives stop giving ourselves permission to do the same thing. Like, all of a sudden we have to be adults. And for whatever reason, we've decided that being adult means that you can't have that in your life.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, there's a lot of aspects of the film that kind of speak to the way in which kids are sort of trained to be adults. Though I was heartened by the end of the film when you have Bonnie and Blaze are playing outside and other kids join them, kind of suggesting that maybe that tragedy that you're talking about can be sort of avoided.
Yeah, and that's something I actually want to come back to in the second half. Mm-hmm. I think that's something to really unpack in the film and in terms of what technology could or could not do. But I was thinking about the world we live in today, and it just seems as if that aspect of play, that imaginative play, has just been completely obliterated.
Yeah.
And as we have this generation of, like, adults who have rejected play, sometimes I feel we've replaced the play with just sort of spite and meanness. That even in our politics or in our cultural life, in the discourse that goes on around us, there's no room for, like, fun and play. That increasingly it's just taken over by mean.
Yeah, though I don't think that's a point necessarily I see the film making.
Fair,
I think the film, for me, very much kind of sees play and imagination being replaced by work. Was sort of what I kind of saw, particularly in the adults and their relationship to technology, which obviously mirrors kind of what's going on with the kids in the show.
Well, imagine if you're a corporate titan who's running a corporation. You can't build a workforce out of Bonnies.
Yeah.
People who come to work and they see the world in pastel colors and these painterly ways, who are always thinking about the world in new ways. You need people who are very focused and understand the task. And so, yeah, it's a depressing story, although I think this film definitely wants to try to suggest that we can have something better.
Yeah, oh, it definitely does, though that something better is very small within the world of Toy Story. That you clearly see in the film the way in which that, you know, the Bonnies and the Blazes and those characters that we're talking about are the exceptions to their world.
Yeah. It's interesting. Sometimes when I teach class, I'll have students do improv just to try to break things up. And that's a very play-based kind of activity. And students are really uncomfortable
they hate
with
improv.
It.
Now,
well, I wasn't going to say hate.
Having witnessed it, they hate improv.
It seems like.
And inflicted it on students as well. Right. They hate improv.
They really do. And yet, when it works, it works so well. And in part because it's connecting our connecting us to a way of thinking about the world that everybody tells us is childish or naive, but in fact might be the most important ways, or one of the most important ways we can think about the world around us.
Yes, and speaking of important ways to think about the world around us, if you're enjoying what you're hearing on WVIA's Pop Shop, please take a moment to like the episode, to subscribe to the show, and click on notifications so you never miss anything that we have to say.
Of course, we're only halfway done here, so after a brief visit from the Kirby, we'll come back with a spoiler-filled second half, thinking about technology and the role it plays in our lives and how optimistic we might be. But before we get there, we, of course, need to have or want to have a word from our supporters at the FM Kirby Center.
And we're here again with Neil from the Kirby Center, here to talk to us about all the things going on this week.
Just three Michael Bay fans sitting around talking about how much we love Michael Bay films, right?
No, we were talking about he is an artist. That's a true statement.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
A lot of his films look very nice.
Any coming to the Kirby in the near future?
Not for a bit.
Oh, that's sad.
Someday,
that's
though. It might be part of our classic film series.
Or a Michael Bay retrospective.
Really using the classic term loosely there in reference to Bay films.
Sometimes age also refers to. But no, there are some good films, obviously, in that canon we were talking before. There's The Rock, solid film.
Rock is well done.
And I mean, ironically, the movie Armageddon's in the Criterion Collection, so they did something right.
That's a weird reality.
Good
for Michael Bay. Right?
I'll leave that to the Pop Shop fans to ponder for the next week.
Yeah, there you go.
So while you're here, though, we probably ought to ponder the actual FM Kirby program.
100%. We have so many wonderful things going on, and I'm really excited because, you know, even though this will be listened to later on, earlier today we had our first Camp United at the Kirby, which is a free day camp for kids to come in with their parents and do all these great, amazing programs. The United Way of Wyoming Valley comes and puts together this great event. We had all these different organizations come with tables and activities. Basically, for 2 hours before our big screen summer series, families can come for free for a fun summer activity day, get a free lunch, you have a free story time where you actually walk away with the book as well.
Very cool.
And then you get to go into the movie again, free of charge. And so you're enjoying great films. Like, we just had Finding Nemo. We had Ratatouille. Next we have coming up is Zootopia, which is a great film.
I've not seen Zootopia.
Zootopia's great.
Yeah?
You might have to come on down and check it out.
Would it be weird, though, for a single man of my age to be sitting in a movie theater by himself?
I mean, it depends. If you give that vibe off, maybe.
I don't. But, you know.
Oh, okay.
What was with asking for a friend.
What was with the head nod?
Well, I'm sure you could come and have a wonderful time, yeah. Mr. Kirby. Although I will say anyone who's 12 and above does have to pay a fee of $5 to be in the theater.
I'm sure Alan will cover me.
And so, but it's really exciting. We have great films like that. We also have our Curtis Mons film series starting up, which is a wonderful series that has independent films, documentary films, and foreign films. We just had Led Zeppelin's Song Remains the Same, and we're really excited because all these films are actually, they start off with a VIA short take. Oh, look at that, the synergy with here at WVIA.
That's awesome.
We have a great piece, Everyone Knows Jabe, airing right on the big screen, and how cool is that? So if you want to find out more, go to kirbycenter.org. You can see all the shows and listings today.
Well, awesome. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks again.
The Pop Shop Studios.
You got it. Thanks for having us. I love the conversations. You guys are killing it.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Neil. We'll see you next week.
See you then.
Thanks once again, Neil, for coming here and talking to us about all the things going on at the FM Kirby Center.
Always a pleasure to have Neil in the studio with us.
Yeah,
for sure. So now we move to the second half. Again, spoilers. So if you have not seen Toy Story 5 and you have any kind of issue with spoilers, now is the time to turn us off, but only momentarily until you've had a chance, obviously, to watch and then come back. Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about technology, childhood, but also maybe the broader society as well, which seems to have been a fairly obvious theme of this film.
Yes, but before we get to that, I do have a question, because there's a moment in the film that struck me when Jesse, the toy, discovers, you know, she's feeling like she's obsolete and neglected, and then she discovers that her previous owner named her daughter after her, named her Jesse, and she finds that, Jesse was here carved in a tree,
right,
and then she finds the lunchbox buried in the ground filled with pictures and stuff of the human Jesse.
Yes.
We're all agreed that human Jesse is dead, right? That's the significance of the lunchbox being buried, and that it's clear, because that's what it signaled to me. It was like, oh, that, because why else would you carve Jesse was here in the tree and bury your memories of her if human Jesse is not dead?
Wow. I thought the darkest thing I took away from the film that it seemed like Jesse's too young to get married to Buzz Lightyear. But no, I just assumed that they... we have very different perspectives.
I'm just saying that
for me,
I'm like,
my assumption was they had sold the house and they were moving
because their daughter died. Yes.
No, and so they went out to the tree with their daughter and they carved Jesse was here.
Could
and
understand
they
that.
Buried but a memory.
But why would you bury a picture?
It's like a time capsule for the next kid who lives in the house.
Except they've been
that
there.
Darkest possible reading.
Toy Story is dark. That's what I'm telling you. This film is dark.
It's dark, but is it that dark?
I thought, for me, it was.
Yeah. Did not strike
Maybe our fans can let us know in the comments if they agree with us or not, or with me.
I will say the beauty of art is that we can all see it differently. Yep. And if young Jesse has died, I guess there's...
Human Jesse.
Young human Jesse. Yep. Like she would have died as a kid, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yikes. That's a tough one to transition from.
Okay. Well maybe we should transition from that tragedy to
dead or alive.
The tragedy of technology in our lives.
Oh, there you go. Very good. So early in the film.
Segue there.
Early in the film, one of the discarded toys at a neighbor's house says that the age of toys
is over.
Is over, right? Like this is how it begins, that big tech has arrived and it's Lily Pad who sort of embodies that big tech. She believes that with some data analysis and some superficial social media messaging that you can make kids happy, which, of course, the film is meant to show that that's not, in fact, the case. One of the things that really struck me about the technology at the very beginning were the way in which the parents wrestled with it. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a parent, you've had that internal debate about when should my kids have access to tech? What kinds of tech should they have access to? And it's this arms race of sorts. As you watch all of the kids around yours adopt the technology, that if you don't, you're afraid your kids are falling behind or whatever. Yeah. And it's just, you know, that part really hit home.
Yeah, well, I think it's clear that Bonnie's parents have wrestled with that when they finally do kind of cave and get the lily pad. It's clearly kind of a reluctant choice for them, that they're kind of doing it because they exactly what you just said. They do kind of fear that Bonnie is falling behind. She doesn't have any friends. Though I do have to wonder that, you know, the idea is that Lilypad connects her with these other girls online, but they're the girls from Bonnie's ballet class. She should kind of know what they're like to begin with.
I struggled with that for a moment, and then I thought, maybe the film is trying to say that even when they're together, the kids only communicate via the technology.
Yeah, well, we see that at the various slumber parties and things like that.
Oh, it's so depressing to see that slumber party where everybody shows up and it's going to be this great party. And they're just all,
Well, I think that was another thing that I thought the film, and particularly the character of Smarty Pants, kind of drove home for me.
Yes.
Was the extent to which, just as a society, the film represents us as having turned our lives over to tech. Because the idea that you have a web-enabled, internet-capable, you know, potty training device seems to suggest ways that we've turned things that perhaps should be very human over to technology.
When I was a kid, or when I was a parent with kids, we potty trained our kids by, like, giving them tiny little plastic dinosaur toys.
Okay.
You know, it was a very low-tech way of encouraging potty. That's probably way too much. The kids are going to be so unhappy with me. Hope was not happy when I said she read the end of books either. I just, this show is going to end my family. Yeah. So, but that was actually the next line in my notes is that when we complain about how technology has taken over our lives, it's because we've chosen, we've invited it into our lives. Mm-hmm. Like we've said we want it, you know, and it's hard. Right? If all your friends have the technology and you're 50 years old, you kind of want the technology to be able to keep up with them. But the film ends with a statement of optimism that I think you gestured towards in the first episode. And I thought this reminded me of Disclosure Day. I thought it was a Spielbergian kind of optimism. Let me try to set it up for you. Do you think I'm right?
Mm-hmm.
And then does it land for you?
Okay.
Right? Because we were pretty unhappy with Disclosure Day.
I will in no way hold against you the fact that you did not like my human Jesse theory. In evaluating your theory. So go ahead.
Fair point. the sip of the coffee cup is nice, very, very ominous in a situation
like that.
It's not going to go well for me. But so it ends in many ways by going back to that sad tree. That's not sad for all of us, but just for Patrick. But with the tire swing there, right? The tire swing is this symbol of different...
Because they're in Bonnie's yard, aren't they?
Oh, okay, it's just a tire swing they go to. Then.
Yeah.
But they go back to that tire swing.
Yeah.
No, it's where Jesse used to play with Jesse, right?
No, at the end, they're in Bonnie's yard because the two twins are across the street.
But maybe,
there might be a tire swing there.
But there's this tire swing that's like the legacy of toys, that Jesse had a kid named after her. And so there is this sort of optimism, number one, that technology really wants to help us in the end, that Lilypad is the cause of sort of Bonnie's crisis. And yet Lilypad, like big tech, they see the error of their ways and they're, oh, we'll fix it.
AI will self-correct.
Yeah. Exactly. And who would not trust AI
to
self-correct in the world in which we live? But then it ends with the twins who earlier shunned Bonnie, now wanting to join Bonnie and Blaze and play. So you see this, it's not just Bonnie by herself doing the play.
Correct.
It's now Bonnie and Blaze.
It's not just Bonnie and
Blaze. And now it's Bonnie and Blaze and the twins. You see this community building and it goes further when the army of Buzz Lightyears, which I have to say for much of the film, I thought, I don't know why we need an army of Buzz Lightyears except that they're funny to kind of work with. But they all sort of fly down into the playground.
Yeah, also the idea that kids could be given a toy that has a surprise fully enabled drone. Like, we couldn't have lawn darts because of the pointy ends, but these kids get to have complete... that is a lawsuit waiting to happen.
I gotta say, growing up in Ohio, we played with jarts. There were no limits.
Yeah,
There should have been
limits. You thought my Bonnie thing was dark, or Jesse thing was dark.
Yeah.
When those drones were flying down to all the kids, I'm like, this is gonna end badly.
Yeah. And yet, it doesn't. It's like this revolution of play. It's gone from Bonnie to Bonnie and Blaze, to Bonnie and Blaze and the twins, to all of these kids.
Yeah.
That there's this Spielbergian optimism that we can reclaim play, that technology hasn't so colonized our lives that there's this hopeful note at the end.
Yes.
Right? How are you feeling about that?
I see it with Bonnie and Blaze and the twins.
Yeah.
I don't see it with because they were, you know, the Buzz Lightyears they're like the deluxe edition or something like that. That's clearly got the same tech abilities as anything else.
Right.
And so there's a bit of a mixed message there in terms of, I don't know that the Buzz Lightyear's distributing themselves to all the kids. I think that might be their intent, but it still is a very tech-enabled toy with the drone. I think if they show that it had some kind of wireless capability. Yes. Didn't they send messages?
Yeah.
Or there was a QR code or something that they scanned off of it. So that one doesn't quite work as well for me. But I agree with you that there is very much that optimism of the end of Bonnie and Blaze. Right. And then when the two twins run over because they see them playing and want to join in the fun. There is kind of that hopeful and very kind of Spielberg-y. Yes.
It's like Spielberg. It's very, very optimistic. But again, it's like Disclosure Day. It was hard for me to fully invest in that, in part because the film is caught in its ultimate statement about technology.
Yeah,
and thus it's complicated, which is fair. It's a complicated world in which we live. But you know what's not complicated? At the end of every show, we've talked about the film.
Yes,
we have to then evaluate the film.
Yes,
in obviously the fairest way possible.
Yes,
by saying that it can either pop.
Yes,
it's a successful film and everybody should go see it, or you should shop.
Yes.
For something else.
Yes,
which seems totally fair and very nuanced.
Yes, well, and in a show that has been talking about the dangers of technology.
Yes,
it's probably great that we have a whole new way for bringing up Pop or Shop.
That's right,
which is about as low tech as you could possibly get.
We have super low tech.
Super fancy paddles.
Pop or Shop panels. That's, so this
don't,
is...
Don't okay. ruin the mystery.
I will not. Are you ready?
Yes.
I am giving it a pop. If you're listening and you're not actually able to see it, I'd call it a Lil Shruggy pop.
Oh, that's what that says.
Yeah, it says Lil Shruggy.
I thought maybe that was your rap name. Lil Shruggy.
Lil Shruggy. If that becomes my nickname, I'm going to be profoundly unhappy with you. So... I like the film. I think that it is a pop. The core sort of emotional resonance that Toy Story always has, like connecting us back to our childhood, it's still there. Maybe for me, with a little diminishing returns, like we've done this now 5 times.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've felt it. This is not the best Toy Story movie, but it has the laughs that a Toy Story movie should have. It has the feels that a Toy Story movie should have. I think it's worth saying. But I will say this. It's not better than Masters of the Universe.
Oh, wow.
That 4 weeks in, I think Masters of the Universe still holds the title belt.
Okay.
How about you, Patrick?
I am also a pop.
Okay. A little shruggy?
No.
A little shruggy pop?
I'm not going to say that. But
it is a little shruggy pop.
For many of the same reasons. I mean, one of the things that really did strike me about it, you're right, Pixar knows how to make these movies at this 100%. Point. And I don't think they've ever made a bad Toy Story movie. Like, their worst Toy Story movie is still a pretty good movie.
Agreed.
I will say that one thing that struck me about this one is it's a lot... The plot is pretty much the same one as the first, in that Woody is threatened by the fancy new, you know, for the time, more technologically advanced toy. And here we've got kind of the same thing with Jessie, you know, the cowgirl, now being threatened by the lily pad and wanting to get rid of it and all. Like, it is still very much kind of a similar plot.
Yeah.
To the very first Toy Story. It is one of the things that surprises me about the film is that Woody and Buzz are the B plot at best in this film. It is very much Jessie's film.
Woody's almost an afterthought.
Yeah, he's barely there.
And Buzz is the love interest.
Yeah, and really they're kind of following along in Jessie's trail. And so I do like the way in which, I mean, and in previous iterations, I've found the character of Jessie a little bit annoying. But I thought the film did a good job of kind of making her move into the main character role. And so I like that it kind of shook things up that way. But it is a Pixar Toy Story movie in kind of every sense of the word.
And there's not anything necessarily wrong with that.
No, yeah. It's perfectly good. Yeah.
So it seems Toy Story 5 has received a passing grade.
I think so. More than passing.
Yeah, a little shruggy. Shruggy B plus.
For someone who doesn't want that to stick, you are saying it a lot.
I should let it go.
You should.
Yeah.
Because one of us is probably not going to, a little shruggy.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for joining us for this episode of the WVIA Pop Shop.
Yes, and thank you once again to Neil from the FM Kirby Center for stopping by to talk to us about what's going on there. And as much as this has been a show talking about the evils of technology, we do want to say that we're happy that to have you use technology in any way to say, I don't know, like this episode, subscribe to the show, turn on notifications, so that, you know, the technology can tell you when Pop Shop is available and you never miss an episode.
But if you're at a party, you're at a World Cup soccer game, you're hanging out with your friends, There's nothing wrong with just saying, hey, you should check out Kara and Patrick and Alan on the show called Bob Shop.
Yes, that's right.
And next week, I feel like at the end of every show, I say, and next week, and then I groan.
I don't know why, because this is something we've all been waiting for.
I would say when you say we've all been waiting for it, you mean you've been waiting for it.
Well, I've been waiting for it on two levels, in the sense of, you know, where it's a superhero movie that I get to go see.
Yes.
And then it's a superhero movie that I get to subject you to talking about
understood.
And going to see.
I understood how that, so, that works.
But yes, it is the first superhero show of season two.
Yeah. Can James Gunn kind of build on the success that was Superman?
That's right. One might ask if, you know, this film is going to go up, up, and away.
If you had time for puns just to pad out a show, you might say that.
Or is this film going to prove to be the DC Universe's kryptonite?
I was
going to
say box office kryptonite.
Yes, that's right. So, so we will be talking about Supergirl next week on Pop Shop.
That's right. So please come join the party.
Support for WVIA Pop Shop comes from the F.M. Kirby Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Wilkes-Barre, presenting concerts, comedy, family entertainment, and community events in a historic theater. Information and upcoming events at kirbycenter.org.